Hey, this is Pearls and Swine on Good News You Can Use. I'm Levi. With me is Lisa. We've been talking just a little bit about this, Lisa, this idea of there seems to be not as many people who just take kind of the next right step, kind of like this faithful, hit the same nail. And it doesn't matter if it's talking about, you know, outside of the church or inside of the church. And you want to share just kind of your thoughts on maybe why is that? Why is it so hard for people to be faithful in doing what they're supposed to do?
Are you talking about like the same tasks over and over again or the small tasks? Like, what do you mean by that?
I think like citizenship. I think family matters. I'm thinking, you know, as you kind of just walk in life, there is some mundane parts of parenting that are just a part. But it seems like people do a couple of the right things, and then there's a veer, or left.
Well, I was just thinking about the connection between the mundanity of life and also being faithful. And I think that is might be one, like if you think about marriage, and it's really great for most people. It's really great at the beginning, right? Some people have a rough start. But for most people, it's pretty great at the beginning. But then you like have bills and then chores and then you got to take care of stuff. And the routine, I think sometimes lulls us into thinking that things could be better somewhere else. And so the next right step doesn't look as good as it did before.
I don't know. It's just like, how do people get off and how in the direction that they're heading? Because it's almost like they veer right or they veer left and it's kind of like if you're in the woods, you naturally will veer one way or the other as you kind of traverse through it. And that's what gets people lost is they veer off of the path or the kind of the middle ground of that. And we all go a little bit right, left on a day-to-day basis on different tasks. But like, how do they do it day in, day out? And the Bible talks about people who are faithful. And there's actually not a ton of them that make it from start to finish.
Yeah.
But there is this guy. His name is Samuel. And it's a weird story. The beginning of the story is that his mom leaves him at the tabernacle, the temple, a church, if you will, the place where people came to worship. And there was a reason for that. It wasn't like she was sick of him. It was she had made a vow to God type of a thing. And so he's growing up in the shadow of this tabernacle, which you would think would be like the most wonderful place to grow up, the most spiritual, and just, you know, all these encounters with people worshiping. You know, he's there with the priest Eli and his sons, and you're going to think, man, they're going to be godly. They're going to, you know, they're the people leading the nation in this pursuit of God. And then you read the story in 2 Samuel, and it's not all it's cracked up to be. These guys have veered off, especially Eli's sons.
Veer is like they're like, oh, they have veered and driven down the cliff.
Well, yeah, because the Bible,
didn't just take a wrong turn. Like,
well, yeah. Yeah. And they're supposed to be like, they're in the lineage that this is going to be handed over to them. They're going to be the next leaders of really the tabernacle and people's worship. And in chapter 2, it says Eli's sons were scoundrels. They had no regard for the Lord. I don't know if I've ever used that word. Like, you are just a little scoundrel.
I like it. I think I'm going to
start. It's very piratey, isn't it?
Yeah, scallywags and scoundrels.
Yeah. But these dudes are living like there's no God. And yet, they're carrying out religious ceremonies, really living in the depth of hypocrisy. And then there's this guy who was left there. He's a kid. And he just somehow, in the middle of this, is faithful. And his obedience is not based on his environment, which I think is fascinating because I think our environments often shift how we respond.
Our disobedience is related to our environment, right? Yeah. I mean, that is one of the reasons often I would say we make a choice because of our circumstances that is off the path.
Yeah, right. Our environment influences. But his environment is one of hypocrisy. Like these guys, just to give you a picture of what these guys are doing, people would bring their sacrifices in. At that time, to relate to God or to restore relationship to God, you would give a sacrifice. And that sacrifice would be a lamb or a goat or something of that nature. And so you would travel sometimes 60, 70 miles and you had done something wrong. Maybe you had coveted your neighbor's ox or you had, you know, looked at his wife in a way that you shouldn't have, or you'd done something else. And you just sense like, man, God, our relationship's off. I need the forgiveness of sin. So you would bring this animal there. And the animal, what would happen is the priest, how they ate and part of the system of this, was that they would receive, I think it's the right shoulder and the kind of the ribs of the animal. And then the rest you would be able to eat. But before that, you would have to put it on the altar and the fat would burn off. And that fat was the offering to God. And these guys, these two...
Scoundrels.
It says that before even the fat was burned, the priest's servants would come, these two brothers, and say to the person who was sacrificing, "Give the priest some meat to roast. He won't accept boiled meat from you, but only raw." I don't know why they went pirate, but it just felt very piratey,
that was
right?
That's nice, yeah. Yeah. I like the accent.
So there's these people confessing. They're trying to get right with God, and you're interrupted in this moment with these two knuckleheads going, yo, we'll take the stakes now. And before the fatty part is burnt off, well, part of the problem is who gets the fat or what's the fat for? It's the offering to God. And the person's like, no. We're not going to do that. And this would be their answer, the next verse. Let the fat be burned first, and then take whatever you want, the servant would answer. No. Hand it over now. If you don't, we'll take it by force. Arr. These guys are, it's like a New York shakedown.
Right, seriously.
It's like these two knuckleheads. Like first mafia, right? They're thugs. And you kind of go, well, okay, whatever. Like there's a part of me, like, because I don't understand that system. I'm like, eh. But I mean, these people, pretty big deal. Like this is how they're restoring their relationship with God. These are the religious leaders and they're circumventing the process. And how do you think God thought about that?
I don't think he was very happy with that at all. I mean, they weren't just circumventing the process. They were actually stepping in and interrupting the offering that was intended for God. there's no atonement for the people, right? I mean, there's all sorts of problems. I think God was not happy.
In verse 17, it says, "The sin of the young men was very great in the Lord's sight. For they were treating the Lord's offering with contempt." Absolutely no regard. You have these scoundrels who are creating a dark environment for the worshipers. But remember who's there. Samuel's there. But what about him? What is he doing? Remember, he's like a little kid at this point, 5, 6, 7 years old. And these are kind of, Eli's kind of his father figure. These are kind of his brother figures. His parents are a ways away from there, and you would go, oh man, he must be snacking on the, you know, goat tartare, but he's not.
No, I mean,
it interrupts. Well, yeah. You gotta just see it. It interrupts right after that, after it says God has contempt, and it says, but Samuel was ministering before the Lord. And it's like, kind of not like really dramatic. It's just this like, interruption of just, oh yeah, there's this kid who's just faithful. He's just hitting the same nail over and over. And he's like 7 years old. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable. I often think that maybe he was scared of them. Like, if I was in that circumstance and those were my, like, pseudo-older brothers, it might be kind of a scary thing to be Samuel and live in that house. You know? It's not like they were nice dudes.
Yeah.
And they were very clearly doing the wrong thing.
Well, yeah, because just a little bit later, it tells you a little bit more about what they were doing.
Yeah, creeps.
Yeah, so there's, like, these ladies who kind of welcomed people. They opened the tent up where is the tabernacle, and it says that they were having relations with them, not married to them, and it was like super wicked, right?
And well known, like everybody knew it. It's not like they were hiding it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because the next verse says that, right? It says their dad's kind of yelling at them, and Eli, who was very old, heard about everything his sons were doing to all Israel, and how they slept with women who served at the entrance to the tent of meeting. So he said to them, "Why do you do such things? I hear from all the people about these wicked deeds of yours." And you go,
"Come on, Eli."
Right, like bad parenting.
That's what you do. You're like,
well, Eli. It might be, it's not only bad parenting, but it's too late. Right? Like, I'm always fascinated by this, and people are like, well, you know, when the children can reason, then.
So when they're 26,
yeah.
After their brains are fully formed.
Well, or even like, I'll wait till they're a teenager. Too late.
Yeah.
Too late. You can't be a permissive parent when they're five and then a, you know, then somehow think you're going to reel them in at 13. It's not going to work like that.
Yeah, no, there's no line strong enough for that. No.
But I think that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to reel it back in. And he's this permissive parent. And this is the very presence of God. They're in the very presence of God. Going out with these ladies, and they're doing things they should not be doing in the very representation of the presence of God here on earth. And he should have said, dude, take your ephod, which is the priestly robe, off. Give me those sandals and get the H out of here. That would have been good parenting. But he doesn't rebuke them like that. He doesn't remove them like that. And that will come back to haunt Eli, because they basically dismissed their dad, and God has to deal with them. God has to deal with them, and they're in the prime of their lives, and God has to deal with them. And basically what happens is this man of God, it says, and we don't know who he is, comes to him and says, tells him, hey, this is happening. Everybody knows about this. I just want you to know what the Lord has said. The Lord said this. You, Eli, you're it for the priestly. God's going to take that and give it to somebody else because you didn't do this. And your sons, as a representation of what's going to happen to your whole family, your sons are going to die on the same day. God's going to take their life. And you, at first glance, I don't know about you, but at first glance, I'm like, don't, that's harsh, God. Like, what are you doing? And you kind of go, well, that seems like a God of the Old Testament. Like, just,
yeah,
like,
that is a thing we say, right? That Jesus is love and mercy and just, you know, forgiveness. But God of the Old Testament, he shows up, he smites people, takes out whole villages. That's the God of the Old Testament.
Yeah, the great smiter.
Yeah.
But the reality is we don't treat anything else like that. When we see something that needs justice to it, or there needs to be punishment to it, we're kind of all in. Like, I was driving and I was watching this mom come out of Walmart, and her kids were like, ran out into the parking lot, almost got hit. And I will tell you, my first judgment is like, lady, get those kids under control. And I would never say this to her, like roll down my window and say this to her. But if I said that to her and she said, Well, I just love them. We would all go, what? That's not loving. What's wrong with you? No. Yeah, no. Right?
Right.
Or, like, if you, you know, this never happens in our society, but, like, let's say there's a couple of varsity football players who, you know, stuff the band kid in the locker. And, I mean, he's in there for a long time, breaks his arm. He has to go to the hospital because he's dehydrated. And then you find out later that the coach knew about it. And so there's a big board meeting.
And people are riled up.
People are all riled up. And the board comes and they say, did you know about this coach? And he says, yes, but I love those guys.
Yeah, it's not going to cut it.
Like, you're going to have a right. riot on your right. hand, yeah. right? Yeah. Like, there's no other place we do this. Yeah. But when it comes to God, we're like, he's loving.
Yeah.
He is loving, but he's also, he warned them multiple times, knock it off, knock it off, knock it off. And then there's discipline. And I think that's the part that is hard sometimes for us to understand. But we understand it in every other situation.
Yeah, so long as it doesn't apply to us.
That's right, right. That's right. Back to Samuel. At the end of that, it tells all of that. And then verse 26, it says, and the boy Samuel continued to grow in stature and in favor with the Lord and with people. Like, people liked him. People started to see him get bigger and growing in favor with the Lord. And he's growing in favor with all the people, but he's just faithful. It doesn't tell us, like, there was, like, these big, huge moments. It's just the next right step, next right step, next right step. In an environment that's pretty dark.
Yeah.
Pretty dark.
Yeah, and that's really hard to do. I mean, it's hard to do when things are, I don't know. That's interesting, too. I think people veer off most often when we're in the, like, when things are going well. When it seems that things are going well, we veer off.
Mm.
And I mean, you could track that with the children of Israel too, right? Things aren't so great. Then God comes and rescues them. Then things are going really well. And then they, like, just little things off away from being faithful, away from obedience.
Yeah, but he's growing up from the time he's 3 years old.
Right.
Like, he doesn't know anything else. He knows the faithfulness of his mom and dad till he's three. I don't remember a lot when I was three. Yeah. And then these three are his primary influencers.
Yeah.
And he stands, like, in the middle of an environment that's really dark. He doesn't blend into it. He stands out.
Yeah, no, it's quite remarkable, actually.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's hard to do that. I mean, it's really hard to be that person.
Well, I wonder sometimes. Like, you know, there are lots of dark situations, like, that we enter into or our kids enter into. You know, maybe it's a work environment and it's just dark. You know, I think of, like, if I was in a construction scene, not that every construction, but there's a stereotype to it, if you will.
Sure.
Or an education system, you know, where, you know, very much humanistic in their understanding of things.
Yep.
You know, maybe a hockey team. Dark. Dallas, he played professional hockey and coaches. And he said, man, it's the darkest thing. And now he's working with an organization to try to help to bring light into that. Like, it would be hard to do that. But the question is, do you want to blend in or do you want to stand out taking the next right step?
Don't you think it's easier to take the next right step if the last step you took was the right one?
Probably, yeah.
You know, so I mean, part of Samuel's success in his faithfulness is that he just keeps doing the right thing, and that becomes the thing that he does, so that he's not, like, questioning, like, at every moment, like, oh, should I do the right thing? You have to imagine that once you, I don't know, not that it becomes easy, but perhaps easier to choose the next right thing if the last thing you did was the right thing.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe. Well, yeah.
I mean, don't you think that's what it means for your mind to be transformed? Like, don't you think that's what Romans 12:1 is talking about?
Yeah. I think it's cumulative.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, you know, we take the passage of scripture that talks about, like, if you're entrusted with a little, you're going to be entrusted with a lot. But I think in the middle of that is God is actually building to the lot. And it's true. Like, there's just like a factual thing. Like, if you're competent or somewhat competent, you're probably going to get given more responsibility, right? And the latter is also
there's a work tip for you.
Yeah,
if you don't want more work.
Don't be competent.
We've got lots of tips and tricks
for you. Yeah. But I think it's cumulative. Like, I think it's day and day, and it's in the mundane. It's in the small. It's in the, and just going, nope, that's not the way I'm going. And Samuel in the middle of it, chapter 3, is this really interesting story in chapter 3. Again, it starts off with the boy Samuel minister before the Lord under Eli. And then there's this like really weird, he's probably 10, 11, maybe 12 years old at this point. And I think he's sleeping in the tent, the worship place. He's on a little cot. And all of a sudden he hears, Samuel. I would freak me out.
Creepy.
Right? And he thinks it's Eli. Eli's old and snoring over somewhere. And he runs over to him. He's like, what can I do for you? And he's like, I didn't call you. Back to bed, boy. Right? Like, that's basically what the text says. And then he goes back to sleep and he hears, Samuel. And again, he gets up, runs over to Eli. Eli's like wiping the drool off his face. It's not me. I need some sleep. Go back to bed, boy. It happens a third time. And then Eli realizes, oh, it's God calling him. And he tells him, he says, man, if you hear that again, this is what I want you to say. Say this, speak, for your servant is listening. And then Samuel hears the very voice of God. And he tells him, you know, what's going to happen to Israel. Eli and his whole family is going to be taken out. And he's just a kid, but a faithful kid. A faithful kid in the middle of an environment that's pretty messy. And Eli opens the tabernacle tent doors and he says, you better tell me everything right now. And so this little Samuel has to tell his father figure, hey, your family's going down. I kept thinking, well, why? If that, he already knew that from the man of God. Like, why does he do this again? In that moment, Samuel became a prophet of God. He became the very words of God. And later in that passage, it says that God didn't allow any of his words to fall on the ground, meaning that he wasn't just going through ritual. When he spoke, it was like it had authority behind it. It had this ability to communicate, like, these are the things of God, and you need to know this. And that served him his whole life. He was able to name kings. He was anointing kings for God. He was there in many, many capacities. Just an amazing life. But it started with just faithfulness. It started with him just going, God, I'm going to take the next right step with you. The next right step with you.
Yeah. And it's an interesting thing that he hears the voice of God and then speaks the voice of God, even though the message is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. Like, that says a lot about what he was willing to do, even though he didn't understand, like, to tell his father figure and his very scary older brothers that, you know, like, you're going down. Mm-hmm. That's not an easy job. Like, God didn't give him an easy first assignment either.
No. Well, I think it's Augustine who said, faithfulness in the little things is a big deal, or is a big thing. Faithfulness in the little thing is a big thing. And that was Samuel. Faithful, faithful, faithful. Ministered before the Lord, ministered before Eli, ministered under Eli, right? And you have these two boys, Phinehas and what's the other guy's name?
Hophni. Yeah.
These two sons who are just wild. I was thinking about this. They had the same access to God, the same place of worship, the same words spoken over them, the same prayers that they probably used and heard over and over, but very different steps. They chose compromise. Samuel chose obedience. So the question for today, in good news you can use, is what about you? What about you? Where do you need to take the next right step? Where is God whispering it, calling your name? And will you have the courage to say, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. That is good news you can use.